Diocese of New Zealand
of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Petitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Welcome to In the Narthex, a radio program of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand. I'm your host, Father Pavlos Petitsis of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, located in lovely Western Springs. And it's still lovely. We've been doing this now for 8 years, Presbytera. How are you today?
Hi there. Yes, it's still lovely, and I am here, and I hope that we're all doing well.
I'm glad to hear that you're here, because last week, of course, you weren't able to be with us, but today we're together.
I just want to note that it looks like we have new microphone foamy things on our microphones, and I'm really excited about that.
There's a little bit of splurging going on at Planet FM, it seems.
Oh, this is nice, because we had a bit of a request, and it's kind of lovely. Anyway.
See that. But today we're going to talk about something of eternal significance, and that is the cross of Christ. And the reason we're going to talk about it is because tomorrow, in the Orthodox Church, is the celebration of the universal exaltation of the cross. And we're going to do our best to give you some insights in the cross, things you may not have thought of before, and some things that will hopefully even be a little bit fun. We have the Kontakion of St. Romanos the Melodist, Presbytera.
Who does?
I do.
You do.
Of, on the cross.
Oh.
And it's a beautiful dialogue that he's written. And it's called On the Victory of the Cross. So we won't be able to read the whole thing, but it is interesting. We'll read some of it.
Okay. So, would you like a song?
Yeah, I like music that lifts our hearts.
Okay, hopefully this is the right one.
On to the west, his love started with the sea. Flood waters rise, but it won't wash away. Love never dies, it will hold on more fear. Cannot lay waste. This is grace. The face of love.
We're going to talk now about the 14th of September, Holy Cross Day. And I want to read to you from a book we've often used on the radio called The Prologue from Ohrid. It's written by a now-declared saint, Bishop Nikolai Velaminovich, and it's been out since 1986, and I think it's been republished several times. this, I won't read word for word, but anyway, approximately. The Holy Cross Day. On this day are commemorated two events connected with the precious cross of Christ. The first, the finding of the cross on Golgotha, and the second, the returning of the cross to Jerusalem from Persia. Staying in the Holy Land, the Holy Empress Helena decided to look for the precious cross of the Lord. And an old Jewish fellow named Judah was the only person who knew the whereabouts of the cross, and he revealed it to the Empress, that the cross was buried under the Temple of Venus that the Emperor Hadrian had built on Golgotha. The Empress then ordered that this idolatrous temple be pulled down. Venus, of course, Aphrodite. So they thought to re-educate the Christians by building a temple to the God of Love over the tomb of Christ, over the place of his crucifixion, because they were referring to Christ as the God of Love. So they said, well, you have it all backward. How can someone who's killed on a cross be the God of Love? So they said, we're going to show you a real God of Love, and so they put the Venus there. So the Empress ordered that the idolatrous temple be pulled down, and there, digging deep below it, she found three crosses. So you can imagine that Emperor Hadrian is around the year, I don't know exactly, but 100 AD. So and I know it's hard for us to imagine that the crosses could have existed, but they were, in a sense, protected by the building of this temple over them. And so when St. Helena came, she acted as an archaeologist and dismantled the temple, and she dug with her, not her own hands, but with the work of the Roman servants there, they dug down until they found the three crosses. And while the Empress was in uncertainty about how to recognize which cross was the Lord's, a funeral procession passed by. Then Patriarch Macarius told them to place the crosses one by one on the dead man. When they placed the first and second on him, the dead man remained unchanged. But when they placed the third on him, he was restored to life. By this they knew that this was the precious and life-giving cross of Christ. And there's another story, too, about a woman who was sick and then recovered because of the cross. And it doesn't say here in this account, but as St. Helena was returning from the Holy Lands to Constantinople, she passed by Cyprus, and she left a large piece of the cross there. And that place, till today, is called Stavrovunio. Stavrovunio, because Vuno means mountain. So this piece of the cross ascended, people carried it there, of course, I'm not saying magically, but it went up into the mountain, and they built a monastery to keep it there. And in our church, we have some icons from that monastery, just to bring things around, if you can imagine. Later, now this is many years later, 400, 500 years later, King Chosroes, I'm sorry, maybe 300 years later, King Chosroes conquered Jerusalem, took the people into slavery, and carried the Lord's cross off to Persia. So there was a battle between the Romans and the Greeks, I suppose you could say, the Roman Greeks, and the Persians, as had often been the case. And the Persians captured the cross of Christ. In 628, for 14 years they had it. In 628, the Greek emperor Heraclius was victorious over Chosroes and brought the cross back to Jerusalem with great ceremony. Now, this is a very nice part of the story. Entering the city, Heraclius was carrying the cross on his back. But suddenly, the aged emperor was unable to take another step. Patriarch Zacharias, who was patriarch at the time, saw an angel directing the emperor to take off his imperial robes and walk beneath the cross along the way that Christ had walked, barefoot and humiliated as he had been. He passed this vision on to the emperor, who stripped himself of his royal raiment and in poor clothing and barefoot took up the cross and carried it to Golgotha and placed it in the Church of the Resurrection to the joy and consolation of the whole Christian world.
The cross is the guardian of the whole earth. The cross is the beauty of the church. The cross is the strength of kings. The cross
Have a little bit of fun with you all today. Thank God I have my presbytera here because she's willing to play along, as they say.
Okay.
Presbytera, here's the first question. What is the earliest and first reference to the cross in the Bible? And we include the Old Testament, of course.
Oh, gosh.
This is not a fair question, of course.
No, okay. But it's not the tree of good and evil. And
it's not the tree of good and evil, it's the tree of
life.
Yes, you got 100 points.
No, I should have gotten 50 for that one. Okay,
so yes, the tree of life. You say, well, wait a minute, how is that anything to do with the cross? Remember, of course, how would you remember unless you studied Greek? But in Greek, the word for wood and the word for tree in ancient Greek are the same. So the word for the tree is xylo. The word for wood is xylo. So the xylo tis ipakuis.
Are they spelled the same?
Yes.
Okay, just wondering.
Exact same word.
Yes.
So basically, the church has always seen the tree of life in the garden as a foreshadowing of the cross. And of course, the cross then becomes the new tree of life. And just as the original tree of life had fruit on it, that if you ate of it, you would live forever, I guess, or always be alive, the tree of the new tree of life has as its fruit, hanging from its branches, Christ, the crucified one. Okay.
Okay, next question.
Next question. Explain to us the symbolism of the cross with Moses' crossing of the Red Sea.
Okay, I did not study for this. Okay, so when the Israelites were crossing the Red Sea after they fled from Egypt as a large group, and they came up to the Red Sea, and they had the Red Sea in front of them, and Pharaoh's soldiers behind them.
Yes, you painted the story perfectly.
Thank you. In bold color. And Moses wanted his people to... Well, first of all, somehow he felt inspired. As he was standing on the edge of the sea, he stood tall with his arms spread out, and he looked like the shape of the cross. And at that moment is when the waters parted.
Almost. I can only give you a 75 points on that one. So you get all the way to the place of him being at the edge of the sea, and he takes
his staff and he puts it in the water, which is made out of wood.
Yes, a wooden staff.
And so it's kind of like the cross deconstructed.
Yes.
And so then the water parts, and then the people start going through, but they're worried because they're thinking that water's going to fall on them. And so, and that even if they get across, then, you know, Pharaoh's horses are going to also. And so he holds his arms out so that people can see him, and in that way it makes the shape of the cross as well. But he's not doing this knowing about the cross. He's doing this as someone who's in tune to God, and this
absolutely
is what God is telling him to do.
It's a type of prophecy. And at the end, he takes his cross, and I mean his wood, and he marks across the water. Of course, he wasn't able to touch the water because it had been separated, but he marks a sweeping sign left to right or right to left. And so the waters closed upon the chariots.
Okay, do I get in trouble now because I got information from you and cheated?
No, I didn't prep you this time. Okay, how about this one? I mean, maybe in a lifetime together, I may have prepped you at some point. But anyway, now there is an image of the cross in Noah's Ark.
The Ark is made out of wood.
Absolutely.
And but why is that? Because the Ark and the cross are totally different shapes. You know, you can get in one, you can't get in the other.
Oh, wait a minute now. The cross, certainly you can get into it, because once you're in the Ark of Salvation, which is the church, and is constructed on the wood of the cross, you are in the safety of salvation. And if you're outside of that Ark of Salvation, the floodwaters can beat against you and even drown you. So the church says to you with open arms, as you're indicating Moses was holding his hands open, the church is saying to you, come into the ark, be safe from the storm here. Now, those are just some of the references to the cross that are in the Old Testament.
That doesn't mean you're not going to be in a storm. It just means you're not going to be in the storm.
You'll be somehow protected by the by the walls of the
ark. Because the storms come anyways. We do not want to give anybody a false impression of this boat.
Well, these are allegories, of course, and symbolism. But someone took the time, I don't know the people, but either in Kentucky or West Virginia, I want to say Kentucky, they constructed a life-size or accurate version of Noah's Ark.
Are you sure it's not Pennsylvania?
No, I don't think it was Pennsylvania.
Well, I thought it was Pennsylvania.
But it's a huge thing. I mean, huge. And then they actually have set it up as sort of an amusement park type thing where people can pay a ticket price and they go up into the ark and they walk through and they're animatron animals in there eating and lions and tigers and bears and who else? I don't know what else is in there. But interesting. I won't tell you that indeed Noah's Ark held all the animals of the world. I think that the Bible writers are allowed to use exaggeration. But anyway, many, many animals were in that ark. Perhaps not every one of them.
Didn't have any fish in there, no octopus.
Yeah, well, the fish were able to survive outside of the ark. But and the killer whales and all those things. But anyway, it must have been quite an amazing thing. Anyway, I wanted to read to you now, if we have time. Do we have time? Yes.
Yes.
A little bit of this beautiful kontakion. A kontakion is a type of musical play, if you will. Most of the time in our Orthodox churches today, we don't get to hear the play because we're only singing one particular hymn from this entire poem written by St. Romanos. But let me just share it with you. This is to give you an idea of how liturgically we've evolved over the years.
I just have a question. Mm-hmm. And you get 15 points if you get this one right.
I'm in trouble now.
No, I'm just kidding. Because it's not that high of a question. So back in the days of St. Romanos, did they do these things as theater?
I think there must have been some theatrical aspect. I don't think they would have actors acting things out. But I think what they did do is have singers singing them in a way that expressed, you know, almost like an opera. You know, there was you expressed the content through the singing. That's the only thing I can imagine. If they just sang it as a dry text, I don't know that people would have enjoyed it very much. There must have been some sort of intonation and reflection of the meaning in the singing.
Right. So, okay. You get 15 points and 85 bonus points.
That's very nice. Okay. Well, let's just start not at the proemion, because that'll take.
That was for mentioning opera. But.
Okay. Pilate fixed 3 crosses on Golgotha. He says, "This is Saint Romanus the Melodist. 2 for the robbers and 1 for the giver of life. When Hades saw him, he said to those below, 'O my priests and forces, who has fixed the nail in my heart? A wooden spear has pierced me suddenly, and I am torn apart. I am in pain, internal pain, and I have a bellyache. My senses make my spirit quiver, and I am forced to vomit forth Adam and those descended from Adam, given to me by a tree. The tree leads them back again into paradise.'" So there's the connection to that tree of paradise, that there was the wood of disobedience, which led to man being expelled from the garden, and now the wood of obedience, Christ's obedience, his perfect obedience to the Father's will, and now they're being led back into paradise through Christ.
It seems like Holy Thursday, and when we celebrate the Holy Cross in the middle of Lent, and Good Friday, Holy Thursday, and all that, they're too solemn for that particular kind of text. It sounds like in September, when we're about as far away from the Feast of Easter as you can get, or Holy Week, you've got some extra thoughts about what's going on. You can personify Hades. You can do those classical Greek kind of things to the story to help people understand. And, you know, that stuff was going on. They were still, you know, when these things were written, they were still using classical kinds of elements, like we would talk about literary devices and things like that. They were using devices like this to help communicate the message.
Absolutely they were, because Christianity did not throw away everything Hellenistic when it became Christian. They preserved anything and everything that they could, because they saw wisdom in it and they saw beauty in it. But of course, they did abandon the worship of the idols and the false theology of 12 gods or whatever. But they did keep those things which were associated with learning and science and whatever they could that was good and holy. They kept it. Let's continue now. This is the second strophe. When he heard these things, the craftily scheming serpent ran crawling along and cried, "Hades, what is the matter? Why do you complain in vain? Why utter these groans? This wood which terrifies you, I fashioned it above for the Son of Mary, and I secretly revealed it to the Jews. It is useful for us, for it is a cross on which I nailed Christ. Since I wished by the wood to destroy the second Adam, then do not disturb yourself. He will not attack you. Continue to have what you control, of which we are masters. No one will escape again into paradise." So, it's a literary piece of Saint Romanus the Melodist. He's saying, here's Hades, who is immediately, as soon as Christ is nailed to the cross, he feels a piercing into his inner self, and he's being split apart. And the snake, or the devil, however you want to refer to him, he's saying, "What are you talking about? I'm the one who's designed this cross. Of course, it's not going to fail me. This whole thing is according to my plan. Christ is dying. That's exactly what I wanted to happen. I'm killing the second Adam." But then it goes on, because now Hades speaks again. "Away with you. Come to your senses, Belial," cried Hades. "Run and cover your eyes and see the root of the tree within my spirit." So the tree of the cross, its root goes all the way to Hades. "It has gone down into my vitals, so that like iron it will drop Adam. Elijah once painted in advance its likeness when he raised up the axe from the river." Now that's a very strange reference, and you probably aren't familiar with it, just like I wasn't familiar with it. But in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 6, verses 5 through 7, there's this story of they were cutting wood, and one of the men cutting wood, his axe head, as he was swinging it, came apart from his axe handle and went flying into the river. And he's like, "How are we going to get it out?" So they cried to Elijah, "We need your help." And Elijah took a piece of wood and put it into the water, and the axe head floated to the top. The heavy metal axe head. So the fathers of the church and the you know, obviously the mothers too, those who were writing these hymns, they saw in that a symbolism of the crucifixion, that, you know, the evil that was intended didn't happen. Something else that was preposterous happened, that those who were dead were set free. Anyway, just to conclude that, so you get to hear the refrain. As an advance notice for you and teaching you that Adam is going to be led from his suffering, led up again into paradise. So the refrain is, again into paradise. So anyway, I wish I had time to read you this whole thing, but there are many, many references here to the wood of the cross that the church has focused on all these years. So I hope if you're free, join us tomorrow. We're going to start liturgy at 9 a.m. And there's a procession with the cross. And we do have a very small fragment, almost minuscule, but anyway, of the true cross of Christ. And we will be proceeding around the church with that precious relic. Soson Kyrie ton laon sum, ke ευλογήσον την κληρονομίαν σου, νίκας της βασιλεύση, κατά βαρβάρον δωρούμενος, και τόσον φυλάτων δια του σταυρού σου πολίτευμα. That's the song you'll hear tomorrow when you come. Today's program just ran so fast from us, as often happens, but we're thankful for your listening today. As always, this program is a ministry of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand, whose Arch-Shepherd is His Eminence Archbishop Miron, and which is headquartered in Wellington. We hope that you had a wonderful time with us today, and we look forward to being with you again next week. Christos entomesimon, Christ is with us.